Jurassic Park 3, Spinosaurus Potter, by Gojira 126, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of Michael Crichton and J.K. Rowling. Chapter 16. The rain continued to pour upon the island for 3 more days until finally relenting, going from downpour to a sprinkling. Not only that, a heavy fog had settled in the lowlands and the mountains. The jungles and forests had heated up from the cooling temperatures of the soggy past days, bringing life to a maximum. Of course, in those 3 days, Harry got to learn about his savior from when that abomination attacked him. Apparently, she was his godfather's cousin, one of 3 sisters in the Black family. Her full name was Bellatrix Stella Black, the youngest of the 3. She had also arrived here on the island the day before her arranged and forced marriage to Lestrange. Turns out the Lestrange family suffered from magical genocide due to the Black family magic taking out its wrath upon that family. Though it was later found out that the Lestranges had breached the contract the night before Bella's disappearance. The would-be groom had spent the night going out into the non-magical world in his Death Eater garb and violating women who couldn't defend themselves. He, his brother, and the rest of his immediate family all melted before the head of the Black family and the rest of the family tree. Sirius still remembered the look of unholy anger on the faces of the Lestrange head of house as he melted away into a flesh-colored puddle, though he would have been punished by his mother afterwards for something he hadn't done if the magic also hadn't struck down Sirius's parents and the Black sister's parents as well. Sirius had been shocked to learn that both parents violated ancient oaths of loyalty to the House of Black by forcing their children to marry those who would destroy the Black magic line. Bellatrix, or Bella as she preferred, lived here ever since. Harry had to do some mental calculations and realized she had been here 4 years longer than he had been alive, 19 years on Isla Cranio, while he had spent 13 to 14 on Isla Sorna. He had to admit that she looked very beautiful and healthy for living on this magic-infused island. She seemed uninterested in him until he started asking about her, which led to the conversation in which both learned about what had happened from both ends. However, both accepted that they'd both be hunted by the natives. Harry had decided to follow the smell of the massive simian who had his mother, until Bella commented on the creature known as Kong. "King Kong is the one who has your mother," she had stated, pulling her top on after washing it in a hot spring in the back of her cave. "The last of his kind. The ones that the primitives have are an abominable variation of the secondary species, Lesser Kongs. Dark magic is infused into their very bones." Harry frowned. "But who would be the predators of them?"
"You are," Bellatrix said, giving him a look. "Your form was the species that hunted the abominable Kongs, until the primitives and their honored demigods hunted them into extinction. Thankfully, they can only reproduce in mass graveyards. The necromancy that helps them live only emanates from there, so thankfully there is only one place that those monsters can breed."
Harry had felt a bit safer at that, as that meant the population was kept in check by environmental factors when the species that hunted them was extinct. He shifted into his preferred body as he greeted the rising sun with a mighty roar, shaking the rock beneath himself. Bella shifted, glowering at him before rolling her eyes. He snorted, leading the way down the mountain as he sniffed the air to get an idea of what would be on the menu. Lily watched as Kong moved away to allow her some privacy to bathe in the slow-moving river that was flanked by multiple hot springs. She hadn't gotten a lot of hygiene as they traveled, and it was clear that the massive simian wasn't enjoying the smell, so he had let her off here before moving off. He was probably looking for something to eat. He was a big primate. She moved closer to the slow-moving waters before she stopped, her senses going off. Something was watching her. Slowly turning around, she watched as 3 Vestatosaurus rexes stepped out of the heavy tree line. An old matriarch, a bull at the prime of his life, and a young male. Lily couldn't help but see this group as a bunch of inbred hillbillies with teeth sticking out of their mouths at odd angles and clearly some physical deformations in all 3. The matriarch stepped closer, a glint in its eye before something roared. The matriarch frowned, slightly turning before a massive silverback gorilla came down with a massive rock that crushed the skull of the young Vestatosaurus.
The older pair roared in anger as the bull snapped its jaws around the arm of the primate, using its larger bulk to pull the ape off its limbs. The tossed body went over her head and landed on the bank of the river, water being tossed into the air before the ape slowly got up. The ape was clearly young, not having battle scars or damage from combat that she associated with Kong, though Lily thought this clearly wasn't the same species, but maybe a cousin of sorts. It lifted itself onto its legs, pounding its chest heavily before something else showed up. The pair of Vistatosaurus rexes were uneasy, glancing at the river in trepidation before their fears erupted from the clear blue waters. The ape turned, surprise evident on its face, before a pair of massive jaws snapped around its head, tearing the head off its body. Standing nearly 40 feet tall, the massive tyrannosaurid-like predator flexed its long arms, four fingers opening and closing into fists. It reminded her of her son's form with his four claws. As the beast swallowed the head of the ape, it stepped onto the bank of the river, four large taloned toes sinking into the mud as its twin rows of medium-sized railroad spike teeth dripped with water, blood, and saliva. The beast looked to be about 60 or more feet in length, its long tail swaying behind it in the water. Lily saw that the back of the beast had three rows of maple leaf-shaped dorsal spines, the central row larger than the others. It was like facing a dragon. The Vastodosaurus Rex pair tried to step back, but then other growls were heard as Lily turned to see shapes stepping out of the trees. Younger creatures like the one from the river roared, growled, and snarled at the pair of Vastodosaurus before the larger one huffed. Lily felt her stomach drop as the group pounced, tearing at the bull, but the Vastodosaurus matriarch snarled as she used a leg to kick a youngster away. The old female kept the group of young predators away as she tactically used her flexibility and intelligence to keep herself from being bitten before something heated up behind Lily, causing her to turn her head. Her mouth dropped open, watching as the rows of dorsal spines upon the semi-aquatic animal's back lit up a brilliant blue, before the matriarch opened her mouth as a stream of magical blue fire blasted the old Vastodosaurus Rex matriarch head-on. Scales, flesh, and bone burned under the torrent of blue flames burnt through the female dinosaur's body, reminding her of the flamethrower team on Isla Sorna. The smell of cooking flesh filled her nose as she watched the old Vastodosaur collapse to the ground dead, the unknown reptile closing her maw after cooking the other prisoner alive from the inside. Her young tore into the cooked meat with gusto as the adult looked at her with those same intelligent eyes, green flecked with orange and red. The muzzle of the matriarch pressed into her belly, smelling her deeply before licking her from belly to face. Lily gagged from reptile saliva before wiping some of the ash-smelling spittle off her cleavage. Spitting some more out, she frowned before watching the mother of the youngsters step over her before joining its young in its meal. Later studies of this creature would discover it to be a species of semi-aquatic dragon that convergently evolved the body plan of a theropod, dropping the wings in favor of this lifestyle. The creature would be named Godzillasaurus magicus, named after the fictional movie monster Godzilla. One of the largest non-flying dragons in the world seems to have a soft spot for her as it purposefully tripped her into the water with its tail. She best not look a gift unicorn in the mouth, after all. Kong would probably be back soon. Bella walked alongside the young Harry Potter. The silence between them was comfortable. Both in their preferred forms, they made their way through the lowlands towards where the largest and slowest of rivers on Isla Cranio wound its way from top to bottom of the island. Along the way, they caught two of the plentiful hadrosaurs that lived in the lowlands for a filling breakfast. As the pair walked along the river, Bella felt a bit flushed from being in close proximity to a male after so long. To be entirely honest to herself, she missed being around the rougher gender. Being alone on Isla Cranio taught her that she needed someone else to help her, but being a predator and the only one at that didn't help things. She remembered laughing and playing with her cousin Sirius, practicing spells with her siblings.
taunting and wiping the floor with her even younger cousin, Regulus Black, even doing a prank or two with Sirius's best friends at Hogwarts. Those memories made her heart clench in her chest, making her treasure them even more. That was until she had found Harry in his Spinosaurid form, and the connection was there. The need for male companionship had flooded her mind until she forced it down with her occlumency shields. That finally removed the flood, as she looked into those feelings and realized that she was starved for companionship. This young man, for that was what he was, treated her with respect, unlike her would-be husband, who saw her as nothing more than a piece of meat or a trophy to show off. That had been the ultimate insult to her, something she hated down to her core. She was pleased with this one, but even as they walked together, her senses went off as her body camouflaged itself. The smell was something that made any wary predator nervous. The smell of the creature the natives dubbed Skullcrawlers. "It's a land mosasaur," Harry hissed, looking at the predator with a keen eye. "Looks like a very old bull." Bella frowned. Land mosasaur? What was he talking about? The Skullcrawler was at the riverbed, lapping up the slowly flowing waters with its long trident-forked tongue. It had multiple scars that dulled the vibrant blue hues that the species were known to have. Now a dull gray coloration. She growled softly before several roars filled the air. As three green dinosaurs came hopping towards the larger Skullcrawler, she watched as the theropods called Gorosaurus surrounded the Skullcrawler, growling and eyeing up the old bull. The Gorosaurus was an interesting resident of the island, known as the Thundering Kangaroo Reptile. It lived up to its name. Its ancestor would later be discovered to be the Allosaurus, unlike the abundance of tyrannosaur-related specimens on Isla Cranio. The predators were mostly located in the jungles and lowlands surrounding the river that crossed the entirety of the island. Over 60 feet in length, 3/5 made up by the animal's tail, it was one of the longest allosaurs alive. Heavily built legs, these theropods were seen hopping around like the Australian kangaroo. Huge heads that had the shape of a pear, filled with sharp, bone-crushing teeth. While their arms were not the largest on the island, they fit the predator perfectly as they could hold objects against their chests. These predators were the marsupials of the island, and their strength lay in their agility and speed. The Skullcrawler bull ignored them, continuing to drink before one of the Gorosaurus leapt at him. Its tail lashed out, sending the mid-air assailant into the river with a splash as the bull turned to the other two Gorosaurs. It snarled before another one of the jumping dinosaurs tried to attack it, only to get pulled off its feet by the foot of the Skullcrawler slapping it away. The last one roared before charging, getting as close as it could before doing something that was the main attack of its kind. It leaned back on its long tail, its legs pulled tightly against its chest before they struck. Like lightning, the leg struck the face of the Skullcrawler with a powerful blow. The skull-headed animal shrieked as its bony covering shattered under the force of the kick, as the other two Gorosaurs were behind the bull. Two jaws snapped around the limbs of the Skullcrawler, pulling its limbs straight before they were ripped off. The last Gorosaur snorted before roaring with its fellows as they got their food and a good fight. Harry nodded, seemingly impressed with the Gorosaurs as he grunted. "Impressive. I wonder why something like that evolved into them. Questions for later, I guess." Bella looked at the larger dinosaur in confusion before sighing. That wasn't something she was going to understand until he explained it to her. James looked in amusement as Sirius looked at the massive crates that had been airdropped to the company's location via plane. Sirius's brain tried to rationalize how they got here due to the helicopters not being able to reach them this far inland. It was rather hilarious. Sure, Lily had dragged them into the modern age, but Sirius, having grown up a pureblood, still had moments that showed how clueless he was to modern inventions.
"But,"
he spluttered as one of the squibs smirked at Sirius, finding this chat as amusing.
"The planes are so high up."
"Yes," the squib nodded. "They have multiple parachutes, help slow down the crates that carry over amphibious vehicles to traverse the river. Our eyes in the sky have made it clear that the river leads through a marshland, then a swamp jungle before going into a mountain range. We don't want to cross that on foot, as that's just asking for us to be attacked. Sirius finally gave up, trying to rationalize the crate dropping, and turned to help get the vehicles out. The vehicles would allow for up to 10 people to travel comfortably with cargo and supplies. They could traverse both land and water with ease. He was ushered aboard one with Sirius before everything that could be loaded was, and the pair of wizards felt the vehicle rumble to life before the armada set off down the river.
"Shall we sing something?"
Sirius asked, to which James slapped the back of his head.
"No,"
James shook his head. "We are not singing sea shanties." Sirius pouted at that, as the armada traveled leisurely down the river. They saw many animals that were pretty common until they hit the marshes, then things changed. The creatures became more bird-like, James noticed, bodies adapted to fitting the life of the marsh. He was looking at the smaller animals before he noticed the water was vibrating in a rhythmic sort of way. Frowning, he looked up, and his mouth fell open, the shock and awe of what he was looking at not registering as Sirius was throwing some stones into the water. James grabbed the back of Sirius's head and turned it to face in the direction he was looking, also getting Sirius to look in shocked awe. Standing above them at 100+ feet tall, a massive sauropod walked calmly alongside the armada. It was looking down at them with its large blue eyes as it let out a powerful cry, a greeting of sorts before it lifted its head once more into the sky, heading for the gigantic trees further back that towered over everything. The sauropod would be later named Titanonaut, the last living member of the Brachiosaurus family, the tallest living reptile on Isla Cranio or even on planet Earth. The sauropod also came with some very odd adaptations that made it a danger to any predators that tried to attack it. Its long tail, covered in bone spines, could skewer a carnivore if they got unlucky enough to be struck. A spiked carapace covered its back to keep any venatosaurs from leaping onto its back. Its powerful front legs had huge talons that would allow for the animal to dig into the mud or eat the roots of plants, as the back legs could hold it up for a small length of time. As James watched, the Titanonaut reared back to pull at the treetops. It landed on all fours, the ground shaking as the water rippled. This was the most awe-inspiring moment he had ever had on this island. It was something like a child discovering something truly amazing for the first time. James grinned broadly. "I can see now why Mr. Hammond wanted to create Jurassic Park." For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Gojira 126. Music from Jurassic Park for the Nintendo Game Boy, gratefully used by permission of composer John Dunn. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact info on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server where you can attend live recordings of all of my ongoing projects, and various ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.